by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Our guest today, cognitive neuroscientist Dr. Julia Mossbridge, writes, with her co-author Teresa Chung, "Precognition tells us that there is far more to this life than meets the eye, or that we have allowed ourselves to believe or imagine. It also tells us that the future, or the unknown, isn't out there, but already alive within us, pre-existing in our bodies, our senses, our feelings, our thoughts, our experience, our consciousness." She goes on to say, "Developing your precognitive ability can change your life for the better. The journey into your future begins from the inside out." She also warns that precognition won't make you infallible or superhuman or fix all your problems or heal all your wounds hurting you or the world. What it can do is to encourage you to look deep within yourself for answers and evolve into a better version of yourself. Today, we'll be exploring the scientific understanding and practical tools to help you develop and explore your own potential for precognition with our guest, Dr. Julia Mossbridge. Dr. Julia Mossbridge is a cognitive neuroscientist and futurist. She's the visiting scholar in the psychology department at Northwestern University and a fellow at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, as well as associated professor in integral and transpersonal psychology at the California Institute of Integral Studies. She's the co-author with Teresa Chung of The Premonition Code, The Science of Precognition, How Sensing the Future Can Change Your Life. Join us for the next hour as we explore the fascinating subject of premonition and precognition with our guest, Dr. Julia Mossbridge. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Julia, welcome.
Thanks, Justine. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. I would love for you to start us off with a little bit of your background, how you first, maybe one of your first instances of precognition or premonition or some experience that you had that maybe even launched you on this whole research activity.
Sure. Well, you know what? My first experience was a precognitive dream, and very many people have had those, and a lot of people doubt that they're anything more than coincidences. So I'm going to tell you a story that's a little more compelling to a lot of people, and that's what I call a precognitive compulsion. So a precognitive compulsion is it's as if you have a drive to do something, but you don't know why it is. And then later you say, wow, it's really good I had that drive to do something because this other thing happened. So you'll understand when I tell this story. So let's see. I think I was doing dishes and I was talking with my boyfriend at the time. Now he's my husband. And my son came home from school. And he would usually ride his bike to school, and he came home from school, and he came in the door, and all of a sudden, I got a little angry at him for almost no reason. He walked in the door, and I said, well, did you check to make sure that the garage door was closed after you put the bike in there? And he looked at me like, what's your problem? I just got home from school. I'm exhausted, you know. And I said, and he said, I don't know. No, I don't know. It probably is. I probably did, you know. Why? What's the big deal? And I said, you have to check on these things. We don't live in the greatest neighborhood. You have to go out there and check. I bought that bike for however much. And I started laying into him. And my boyfriend looked at me and just said, you know, Julia, if this is a problem for you, you should go check yourself. Joseph is, that's my son, is pretty competent, you know? And I thought, okay, you're right. I'm getting a little bent out of shape. So I said, fine, you know, I'm still irritated. And I walk to the garage, which is separated from the house. And I checked the door and lo and behold, he had in fact remembered to lock it. But I was still irritated and sort of completely unself-aware. I just felt like I was running on autopilot. And on my way back into the house, I passed by where the electrical meter is and I saw it was on fire. And I realized on the other side of the wall where the electrical meter was with the fire that was rapidly gaining steam was my boyfriend's oxygen tank. So he was going through a pulmonary disease at that point and was on oxygen. So if I hadn't had that compulsion, you know, it's easy to think about these counterfactuals, but the reality is if I hadn't had that compulsion, I don't know that anyone would have seen that. And it's hard to think about what would have happened next. So I can't prove, it takes laboratory science to prove that someone has precognitive ability at a rate above chance. But throughout my life, I've had many compulsions and precognitive dreams that have led me to say, okay, the way that I've been told that time works is not the way that events in time actually work. Or at least it seems that I can get information about future events consciously, subconsciously, in very many different ways, and it helps my life. And because I have a scientific sort of mindset, I wanted to study that.
So there you go. Oh, the wonderful, wonderful way of introducing this whole idea of precognition or premonition. So what is the difference between the two?
Yeah, so the book is called The Premonition Code, and we wanted that title because most people have heard of premonitions. It's a feeling. It's an experience. Premonition comes from pre, before, monere, to warn, so warning before. And now people use it for positive things as well, like a premonition, I'm going to win an award or something fun, right? And the code part is trying to break it down into what does it mean? What's the science of it? What's the practice of it? So that's really the essence of what we're trying to do, trying to create a movement around everyday people in the world, many more people knowing that precognition, which is the scientific term for premonition, that precognition is normal, it's scientifically supported, it's common, it's one of the most common experiences that's unexplained, and it's okay. It's not going to hurt you, and there's ways to deal with it in a positive way. And so, in fact, we invent something with the book and with the website that we call positive precogs. And I'm really excited about that term because some people do have fear about these things and they think it's evil or the devil's work or something. And I want to say anything can be used for positive or negative ends. But if you decide you're a positive precog or something like it, it means you're actually thinking about how do I responsibly use this skill? How do I develop the skill in a way that works for me in my life, for my family, and for the community?
So I want you to say something more about positive precogs.
Sure.
What is your suggestion if we want to pursue this and we want to do it for good, to produce good in the world for ourselves and others?
Yeah. So I think maybe one way to answer the question is to sort of paint a picture of a vision of a world, say 5 or 10 years from now, where positive precogs are a thing that people know about and are actively involved in training to be or doing. So let's paint that vision. So you could imagine, so given that we know, in fact, from science, that from scientific research, that precognitive abilities exist and that the military, in fact, has been using precognitive abilities to get information, and we know from that history how to train people in this ability, especially people who are particularly good, how to train those people. You can imagine a group of positive precogs being included, for instance, on a positive precog council at the UN, right? So you could imagine that there could be a group of precogs who are particularly good at dealing with environmental threats. So upcoming environmental threats that would not normally be predicted using usual means. So without inference, for instance, or without an artificial intelligence, you couldn't predict them, but they happen. So these precogs would be good in that area. And another set of precogs could be good at anti-terrorism things. So unpredictable, like the Las Vegas massive shooting felt to the FBI to be very unpredictable. So things like that. You could imagine another group of positive precogs on the council whose job it is to work with upcoming famine that, you know, we still don't have in our models, but is sort of the anomalous event that occurs that wasn't predicted. It's basically creating a group of people whose job it is to fill out the missing information from our models of what's going to happen in the future. You know, the better we get with artificial intelligence, the more we can predict and the more factors that we can use to predict. But humans who have this ability of precognition and who train to do it and want to make the world a better place could potentially be involved in that community. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I'm just wondering if you say, when you mention artificial intelligence, so artificial intelligence is something that's, and I may be wrong about this, we put into that, we program it in from our own analytical minds and try all the things, whereas precognition is tapping into some other field of energy.
Maybe. So a couple things. So it's tricky. So artificial intelligence is built by humans so far, who create these, let's take deep learning network, who create something that's kind of like a neural network. And then the neural network is run on sort of features of something that the people who program it are interested in the neural network learning to sort out. Like, here's a bunch of grapes. Figure out which ones are good for making rosé.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. So it's both analytical to set up and non-analytical to let it run. To let it run, it's just kind of doing its thing.
Because it makes all sorts of connections.
Yeah, and it's actually extremely difficult, if not impossible, to follow sort of the black box of what's going on in there when you run an artificial intelligence neural network like this or a deep learning network.
As much as our own brains?
Well, you know, our own brains are much more complicated than any deep learning network right now. But
yeah.
I think they're equally difficult to. I mean, so once something can't be traced logically, it doesn't matter how complex it is. Deep learning networks are already to the place where you can't trace it logically.
Right.
And of course, they're less complex than the human brain. So you've got artificial intelligence or AI on one hand. Now, all the information that's going into artificial intelligence or AI is usually information that comes from the five senses. So what are, you know, images, sounds, data from people's behavior, right? All these things are five sensory. So then you look at precognition. We don't know how precognition works. What we know is that statistically, on average, people unconsciously can get information about future events. And we know that there are certain people who are really good at consciously getting information about future events. And that's what we know.
So that's what the difference is that,
yeah,
I'm thinking of, that there is something we just don't know yet.
Right.
Although you are actually doing, one of the scientists who are doing research on this to,
right,
actually say, here's the data that we have that can be replicated.
Right, right. And also and there's other researchers as well.
Okay, so we'll talk about that in a moment. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dr. Julia Mossbridge. She is the co-author with Teresa Chung of The Premonition Code, The Science of Precognition, How Sensing the Future Can Change Your Life. And if you want to know more about her work and the work also of Teresa, you can go to the website, thepremonitioncode.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Julia Mossbridge, and she is the co-author with Teresa Chung of The Premonition Code. And we're talking about the scientific data that you've collected and that you're not the only scientist that is working on this. So if you could just briefly say who else is working on it or how big is that group?
Yeah, so there's people I can name and there's people I can't name. So the people I can name are people like Dean Radin at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, Arno Delorme at the same location. You've got Mark Whitman over at the thing I can't pronounce in Germany, like the Institute for something and something, IGPP in Freiburg, Germany. You have folks like Carolyn Watt, who studies precognitive dreaming. She is the chair of the Kessler Parapsychology Unit at a university in the UK.
So in other words, there are quite a few worldwide, and you're talking to one another, right?
Oh, yeah. We talk to one another at meetings every year or every other year.
But I know that our listeners would love to hear about, are some of us more predisposed to being precognitive or others? Are there personality types that do better with this than others?
Yeah, I love that question. So the answer is sort of yes and no. And the reason it's yes and no is because we're very early. With every question that comes with precognition, that is not just does it exist scientifically, the answer is always, here's what we know so far, but there's so much more to learn. Because so much effort has been put into trying to prove that precognition is real, that understanding the mechanism and understanding some of the peculiarities, it just hasn't really been fully done. So what I'll tell you about are personality traits or things that you can do to be more precognitive. And when I say this, I don't mean these are not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is not based on studies of people who believe more in precognition if they have these personality traits, although those studies exist. What I'm going to talk about are people who perform better on actual rigorous controlled scientific experiments that test for precognition and how those correlate, how the performance correlates with personality type and activities. So a couple right off the bat that have been replicated, the personality traits of openness and extroversion seem to correlate positively with skill on precognitive tasks. So openness is a personality trait that's about how open are you to new experiences? How willing are you to consider different points of view? These kind of things. Extroversion is a personality trait associated with are you pulled towards interacting with other people in a way that it gives you energy? And those two personality traits, they correlate with precognitive ability, but the correlation is not huge. It's significant, but it's not huge. And what that means is you could have neither of those personality traits. You still could be incredibly precognitive. So that's just a hint, right, towards some of the personality traits that seem to be involved.
But not to stop someone if they say, oh, I'm really introverted and shy. I'd never be good at this.
That's right. That's right. There's so much we don't know. It could be that someone who's introverted and shy but has some other characteristic that we don't know yet turns out to be the best type of precog, right?
Right.
We don't know.
Right.
So the other things, though, that you could do that actually you have almost more power to change than personality type, one is meditation and one is belief. So it turns out in two studies, it seems to be the case that conscious precognition, which is where literally the task is, sitting you down in front of a computer, asking you which of these four images do you think the computer is going to pick to show you? And then you pick one, and then the random number generator independently decides which to show you, and it appears. In that kind of precognition, conscious precognition task, long-term meditators seem to have a significant edge over people who haven't meditated.
Wasn't there some sort of study done with Tibetan monks?
That's the one I'm referring to. And there were two studies. Serena Roney-Dougal, she's in the UK. She studies precognitive dreaming and precognition in meditation. And she showed the correlation between the more meditation, the better the score. Now, the problem is that could be confounded by age, because the more meditation with Tibetan monks, the older they are.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because it's the number of hours of meditation, so they've been alive longer. So we don't know yet, right, if it's age, but certainly meditation seems to make a difference. So
is there any, do you find that you're making any conclusion about that?
Well, it's a weak conclusion. So the weak conclusion is try meditating if you want to see if it helps you with your conscious precognition. You know, just try it and see.
So don't even worry about why. Why is a demented question, maybe. It's not demented.
It's not demented. It's just that it's like, it's almost like, look, if you have three bits of data about something and then you're going to build a whole theory based on those three bits of data, the chances of you being wrong and wasting your time are really high. And the chances of you spending time doing something that actually isn't as beneficial as just playing around in the muck to try to figure out what's going on are really high.
Right? So you're just saying if it's more effective for you, then, hey, keep meditating.
Correct.
And then you talk about like these controlled experiments. Now, on your website, people can actually log into it and actually do these experiments, right?
Oh, totally. But I should add that I was going to talk about two things you could do.
Please.
Oh, sorry. Let me just finish that up.
Please.
The second thing you can do is you can believe in precognition.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of, literally, people who believe more in precognition and believe they have precognitive experiences perform better on precognitive
tests. So you're saying meditation and belief that it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's actually part of why we wrote the book, is we wanted people to get it, that this is common, this is scientifically valid, it's normal. It doesn't disrupt all of our ideas about time. It just makes us think a little differently. So just those are the things that you can really control that we know about now, meditation and believing. And then try it. Practice. And so that's where the website comes in.
So you get to actually practice, and you practice. It's not on things that you're going to predict about, oh, what is my future like, or what is this trip going to be like, or whatever, you know, something personal. It's very impersonal. So kind of describe what it is, but it helps you to practice it.
Yeah.
And then you get feedback.
Yes.
Like playing your scales to learn piano.
Right, totally. So it is like any other skill. So almost everyone can learn to play Mary Had a Little Lamb on the piano. You know, almost everyone can do that. And some people are concert pianists after a few lessons, right? Some people are these geniuses, and most people are in between. So my guess is most people listening, and certainly including myself, are in between those two poles with precognition. And so what the website is about giving people on the, what we call the positive precog training page, we give people the chance to over and over again for free, as many times as you want, to test your ability on something that's not earth shattering. It's not, should I marry this person or not? You know, should I take this job or not? It's what are the contents of the picture that's about to be shown to me? And all of the pictures, none of them are violent and none of them are sexual. So it's benign. It's a benign question, but it's also a hard question, right? If all the pictures that might exist in the world, and we have more than 500 in the database, which is the one that is about to be shown to me? Even if you know all 500 pictures, you still have a 1 in 500 chance, right, of being able to correctly describe the picture that you're going to be shown. So the way it works is, on the website, we take everyone through this, what we call the 6 steps of controlled precognition. And those include things like making this handshake between your conscious mind and your higher self, or your superconscious. Do you want to?
Yeah, just say something a little more about that. The first step is a handshake.
Yeah. One of the most important steps is the first step, which is creating this handshake, an agreement, a collaboration between what we call the higher self or your superconscious mind, which is this part that can apparently go out into the world, get information that we didn't know was coming in consciously, and can process it in a very parallel, high-speed way. And the other part of the handshake is from your conscious mind, your what we think of as ourselves or our egos. And that part of us has the ability to process much more slowly, but it likes to make decisions. It likes to keep us on task. So those two need to do their jobs. Neither one is wrong, but we need to create an agreement between them.
And the one, that second one, is more analytical. It uses our senses, our touch, taste, smell, that sort of thing. And whereas the other one comes from another place.
The superconscious can also integrate information from touch, taste, smell, et cetera. And it seems to be getting information from the future, or at least that's my interpretation of what's going on.
So it's, and I know that some physicists would say that there is no linear time. Time can go forward and backward and every which way. Then we're going to get into time in a little bit, so I don't want to get into that, but right now. But all right, so the first thing, you log into the website, the first thing is to have that handshake, to have this collaboration between these two parts of ourselves.
That's right. And that's part of the original process of what I call mental preparation, physical preparation, and emotional preparation. So that's all detailed in the book, and also shorthand for it is on the website.
Yes.
And then you go through several steps getting yourself ready, and they're kind of boring to describe. They're a little technical.
Right.
Drawing a squiggly line, writing down an 8-digit number that represents the target, on a piece of paper. And then comes what the
big... But you hold our hand at going through
sure.
So we know, okay, now I write down a 8-digit number and I make it up and, okay, I have a piece of paper and a pen and
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And then comes the really important part, which is the learn and discern part. And the learn and discern step is about getting yourself, this is where you're really actively using that collaboration between your superconscious and your conscious mind. Now, just so you know, a little aside, when I talk about that, no, there's no way to test whether this is actually your superconscious and your conscious mind. This is a metaphor for what's going on, okay?
Okay.
But metaphors work. So this is where you're using that collaboration. What you do is you write down your 8-digit number, you draw a little picture that comes to your mind that you're basically channeling from your superconscious, and you start to sense into the picture what words and images are in there. And you're basically describing an element of the photo that you're going to see. And then when you're done with that, you make a new page and you do that again. And it's actually kind of a technical process. And it also feels really good. It feels like when I'm really doing well in my own controlled precognition practice, I can hear my conscious mind start to rebel. And I know I'm doing well. I know I've almost got the target when it says, this doesn't make any sense. I don't know where this is coming from. Well, of course, it doesn't know where any of it's coming from, right? So I don't know where it's coming from. And I think, oh, good, I'm on the right track.
Okay.
And so then when you feel like you're done, you basically decide you're done. You get out of there. And you go on to this phase that's more analytical. And that's when in the website we show you two graphs. And each graph is, now what has happened is a random number generator has picked two pictures out of the 500 or more pictures. So now your chances of getting it correct are now 50-50.
Yes.
And these two graphs are representing all the elements in the pictures. So let's say one graph says there's animals or people, and there's also water, and the other graph says there's human-made structures, but nothing else. So you have to choose. These graphs are mutually exclusive. We don't have human-made structures versus human-made structures. It's always...
Okay, something that's different.
Something that's different between them. So that you can then go into your session, back into your papers, and you look, do I have lots of animals and humans? Or do I have structures?
Okay, now we're sitting on the edge of our seats, and I have to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dr. Julia Mossbridge, and she is a co-author with Teresa Chung of The Premonition Code, The Science of Precognition, How Sensing the Future Can Change Your Life. And the website she's talking about right now is thepremonitioncode.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Dr. Julia Mossbridge. She's a cognitive neuroscientist, and she is the co-author with Teresa Chung of The Premonition Code. And we're talking about this place on your website where you can